Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And happy Friday, everyone, on the Three Martini Lunch, along with Dan Foster of National Review Online, sitting in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, it's obviously a long way before we even know who the Republican nominee for president will be next year. But Jim and I were celebrating a slight lead for our favorite Republican, generic Republican, against President Obama a few weeks ago. Now Gallup's got it up to an 8-point lead for the generic Republican, 47-39. And as Jim pointed out in the morning jolt today, obviously when we have a specific Republican, those numbers could change. But the fact that Obama against this random sort of person out in the ether only gets 39% means that at least 61% of the people are willing to look elsewhere. And that's really good news for conservatives.
John Podhoretz, the editor of Commentary, cracked the joke. Generic Republican, isn't that John Thune? I thought that was funny. But I mean, I draw two lessons, and they're not necessarily compatible, so I don't know which one is right. But my two thoughts on seeing that poll were, one, everyone's been looking for a kind of conservative messiah, a terrific candidate, a world beater. And polls like this tell me we don't need one. We just need a good enough one. The environment's a lot different than it was in 2008. And we probably, you know, maybe competence and not being Barack Obama wins this race. But the second point is that, like I said, it's perhaps not compatible with that. It's from a pure campaigning perspective. The president of the United States, the incumbent president of the United States, has so many advantages built into a reelection campaign that I look at an 8-point advantage for a nameless, faceless Republican, and I think, well, that maybe just evens the odds. I mean, we saw President Obama's fundraising haul outstripped expectations dramatically so far. Make no mistake, his base is going to show up. They're going to get fired up. They're going to organize. And so I think this is less a cause for confidence than a cause for thinking, well, maybe this will be a fair fight.
Dan, one of the things that's been talked about a lot as the president spends more and more time in front of the cameras during this debt ceiling debate is kind of alluding to the point you just made. He claims he's alienating some of the lefty part of his base, but as you just pointed out, they're going to show up anyway. So the plan seems to be here tacking to the center and making people forget about the last 2.5 years and what policies he's been putting forth. The question is, do you think it'll actually work?
Right. I think it's funny, and I'm not going to second guess the Republicans' tactical maneuvers on this stuff, but I think it's funny that this is a guy who, in a speech just a few months ago, laid out a budget, or at least principles for a budget, that would dramatically increase the debt over the next and deficit over the next 10 years, is all of a sudden saying, if not now, then when? I mean, I think this is a dramatic and fairly transparent reversal, and I know it's the kind of thing politicians do all the time, but I don't think the Republicans have been doing enough pointing to it. But the fact that you're right, that he's acting like he's been on the mat for deficit reduction since day one, is just a joke.
I also like how he suggests that if we can just get some sort of middle ground here, this whole debt deficit thing, it's just going to go away. We're going to solve it real quick here. Nothing's to worry about. No need to keep looking behind the curtain. He makes it look as though if we just raise taxes on the rich, everything will be okay. And I think most people pretty much know that that's just a line of malarkey. So hopefully they know that anyway.
Right. And the main thing, one more point on this topic. The main thing is that young bucks like myself, who might be a little bit more optimistic because I haven't been around long enough to be a cynic on these things, say, well, maybe we should go for the grand bargain. If we can get fundamental restructuring of entitlements, if we can get long-term deficit reduction and major, major spending cuts on the order of $4 trillion, well, why shouldn't we – isn't it realistic to think that we're probably going to have to raise taxes at least temporarily to eliminate the deficit? But then people who've been around for much longer very politely inform me that spending's going to get cut if we just raise taxes. Well, the taxes always get raised, and very frequently the spending never gets cut. So that's something that if you look back at like the deficit deal that Ronald Reagan made in 1982, the budget deal that he made in 1982, and a number of other examples, the taxes always get raised. The spending only sometimes gets cut.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Dan, and it's just fascinating how all of this is coming together as we get closer and closer to August 2nd, and pretty soon the United States is going to be looking a lot like California, which is, of course, a fiscal mess. But California is our bad martini today for another reason. Obviously, whether it's New York State, other states around the country in recent years, the idea of legalizing gay marriage has been a very hot-button issue in the social circles. New York, the latest one. California still going through it due to the challenge to Proposition 8. But California Governor Jerry Brown has just assigned, and the California Democratic Legislature has basically mandated now that schools teach gay history to kids as young as kindergarten. And this isn't exactly just, hey, look at what somebody did who happened to be gay. It's look how great gay is. And so it's just a what a lot of people think is indoctrination here. And as young as kindergarten, those who worry that just legalizing certain things is going to bring on a whole list of unintended consequences have a little more ammunition in their quiver, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, California's really got its eyes on the prize, doesn't it? It's fifth largest economy in the world on its own, and that is careening in towards bankruptcy and obsolescence, and they're worried about whether or not gay history and the contributions of gay Americans to history get a big enough piece of the pie. I mean, that's what's dangerous about all this, you know, hyphenated American talk. It used to be that the point of including various ethnic religious groups in a conversation about American history was the understanding that we're all Americans. Now it seems that the point is just we think our guys need a bigger slice, need a bigger chapter, need a bigger piece of the story. And that's dangerous. And I mean, besides, it's as you said, the vast majority of important contributions throughout history by homosexuals were by deeply, deeply closeted homosexuals and probably by people, you know, who we don't even know. I mean, a lot of people think James Buchanan, one of the worst presidents in history, was gay, the bachelor president. So I don't know what besides, sure, do I have a problem with California teaching kids about Harvey Milk and what he did in San Francisco? I don't have a problem with that if it's in high school and you're doing contemporary history. But I just don't know what this broader curriculum means, and I suspect the answer is nothing much good.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And staying in San Francisco and California, on to our third and final martini. And Dan, Nancy Pelosi, as far as I know, has had almost nothing coherent to say about the debt talks, but she does apparently have phenomenal admiration for President Obama. She's had some outlandish quotes in the last couple of days, one of which is that no one on the Republican side, or perhaps anywhere, can out-debate President Obama. But that's not even the crazy martini. The crazy martini is that Nancy Pelosi has now elevated President Obama for a certain virtue above a man synonymous with it from scriptures. Here we go.
I want to commend the president. I have never seen Job is no place compared to this president in terms of patience. He doesn't even begin. Because this president has demonstrated a level of patience, not only during the meetings, but as respectful of the suggestions that are made by all parties at the meeting.
Wow, for the first time in his presidency, somebody's actually vehemently disagreeing with him who has the power to do something about his agenda, and all of a sudden he's eclipsed Job. I guess, Dan, considering the fact that 2.5 years ago everyone was considering him the American Messiah, means he's been downgraded to some extent. So I guess that's the positive spin for conservatives on this. But Nancy Pelosi clearly engaging in what I hope is hyperbole. If it's not, it's just sheer insanity.
I always get, you know, I get weirded out when Nancy Pelosi quotes scripture, which is something she does fairly often. What, you know, the old saw about even the devil can quote scripture for his purposes. Well, speaking of the devil, Satan smote, if I'm using my correct past tense of smiting there, Satan smote Job with horrible boils right after killing all of his sons and daughters. So to compare that with a president who might be forced to take a debt ceiling vote in an election year, I don't think is a great one-to-one comparison. I'm sure there was, you know, obviously the former speaker, the minority leader, was engaging in some hyperbole there, but it just goes to show that, as we were talking about before, for all the moaning and groaning that liberals in this country do about President Obama, they still think he's the cat's meow and they will show up for him.
Yeah, I think that's undeniable. And so we'll see what the independents are doing. That same poll that showed the generic Republican ahead by 8 points also showed generic Republican ahead by 10 points among independents. So we saw a bigger gap than that in the midterm elections. So let's hope that it's no narrower than 10 points. If we can keep it 10 points or higher, it should be a decent night for conservatives a little less than a year and a half from now. But obviously a lot of time to go between now and then. So, Dan, great to have you with us today. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrity will be back with me on Monday. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you then.